know you're broken hearted, cause the peace you're hoping for is off the scenes apart. Thoughts and feelings often disregarded.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I am Robert Rosenthal. My guest tonight, we're just going to go right straight to it. My guest tonight is Tyler from the site. You know him as Walk-On. I always introduce him as what he was, which is a walk-on on the 1989 Flying Illini team. I'm probably going to ask him some more questions about that, although he's probably sick of answering those questions from me. But we're going to talk Illini basketball since we are a week away from the first game. Actually, we're going to start with this. We're going to start with golf because Tyler and I went on a golf trip in September. We went up to Sand Valley. We played Sand Valley and Mammoth Dunes in central Wisconsin. It was a great time. It was a group of eight guys. And so I'm going to start by letting Tyler tell on me. So, Tyler, let's start with your description of my golf game.
Well, let me preface it by giving a huge plug to this golf mecca in the middle of absolute nowhere.
I mean, yes.
You drive to the absolute middle of Wisconsin. Like, you threw a dart in the middle of the state. Dead center. And you're driving on these country roads, and all of a sudden you pull in this tiny little nondescript driveway, and all of a sudden you're in the most unbelievable golf paradise you could ever imagine. And it was just, as someone who got away from the game of golf, who was formerly an avid golfer, got away from it for reasons I won't go into, but now try to maximize the golf opportunities that I have. I'm kind of a golf snob, so if I'm going to play, I'm going to play somewhere nice and do it up. And I'm telling you, this was off the charts. It was just insane.
Yep.
And as Robert said, there were eight of us, and we played on two consecutive days, and we kind of split up the group, so we all got to play with each other. But I had the ultimate pleasure of playing with Bob on all rounds,
which, and remember, was the first round, since we are walking and we walked 15 miles that day. You got me at my freshest legs.
Yeah. So one thing I'll say is that if you're ever in a scramble with Bob and you want somebody to drive the ball 220, 240, right down the middle of the fairway, and
231 is my number. 231.
Nothing else. You want nothing else.
Putting. A little bit of putting. An occasional putt will roll in.
Now, if you want that perfect drive with a side of immense angst, then Bob is absolutely your guy.
That's right.
We're in the middle of this golf paradise, and all of us the night before we're gathered together and we're talking over the fire and a few drinks, and we're like, you know what? This is amazing. Let's just enjoy it. It's not about how you play. It's about this amazing atmosphere and the camaraderie and this group of guys. And we're all like, yes, this is going to be it. And one hole in, and Bob is dragging his bag behind him. We're dragging his club behind him like Pigpen. He's just defeated on like two holes.
Let's talk about the first two. I can reenact the first two holes. First hole, perfect drive, 236, very short par four. So I've got like 100 in. I blade it way, way over the green. Now I'm worried about blading again, so I chunk it short. So now it's three. Four gets on, but it's a little heavy and rolls all the way down to the front. And then I three whack for an eight. Eight? Seven? Eight? I can't remember what I took. Second hole, perfect drive. I leave the second shot a little left. Like, it caught a little edge of the green, but bounded down to the left. Bladed over, chunked short. This is a consistent theme. Like, if I blade one, I'm chunking the next because I'm trying to scoop it. And then three whack again. So I started quad and triple, I think. And it was downhill from there.
Yeah, the short game, it needs some work. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yes, I think it was third hole. I was like, that's it. I'm not trying to chip anything. We're putting from 60 yards. I do not care. It's short enough grass. Let's just see what we got with this putter.
And I know we're at a place called Sand Valley, and of course it is nothing but sand. There's literally no water. Mm-hmm. You can play 36 holes of world-class golf with one golf ball, but there is a lot of sand. Mm-hmm. And be that as it may, your ability to find the sand in any possible manner was beyond impressive. I mean, I'm in the watching, you know, I'm just like, just please, please don't go in the sand.
Yes.
Please.
It's a magnet.
In the sand again.
Yep.
Always in the sand again.
Except for the 17th hole.
Yep.
Which is like the hardest hole, like 210 par 3. You got to hit it through this little slot at the top of the hill. And I hit the perfect hybrid and leave it on the very front edge of the green and made the putt for a birdie on, I think, what's the hardest hole on the course. And so I believe I went 61-52 for a 113 that day.
With a 2 on the card.
Yes, with a 2 on the card. And then we played Mammoth, and I kept getting better. I went 49-43 at Mammoth because the swing started to come around, and I hadn't played golf in forever. And on the back nine of Mammoth, I'm like, you know, every shot is pure. Like, I remember how to play this game. And then the next day at Sand Valley again, I blew up once again.
Yeah, let the record show you did drive a par 4 at Mammoth Dunes that afternoon.
That's a good point. That's a good point. The 14th hole at Mammoth, which was – now, Carmen also drove the 14th hole, but he did it with a 3-wood. But I did it with a driver, and if you hit in this one spot on the backside of this bunker, it's built to just funnel it straight down to the green, down the hill. And I did. So, you know, that's golf, right? You know, you shoot a 61 in the morning and you're dragging your club and you hate life and you're like, why did I spend money on this? And then you hit the perfect drive on the 14th hole and I want to play this game forever.
You literally said that like 5 times in the morning at Sand Valley. Why did I spend money to come here?
I don't even deserve it. I shouldn't even be here. This is pointless.
Yes. Yeah.
And then that's what we just launched the site. So all the emails are coming into my phone and I'm forwarding them to Brumby because I just can't do anything while I'm golfing. And I'm like, I shouldn't be here. Why did I waste this time? There are people, they're going to be mad. Their subscriptions aren't working and it didn't link to theirs. And I should. Yeah, I was in my head. But then, you know, a couple drinks around the fire and a cigar and all is right with the world again.
The perfect representation of your golf game would be for you to post the picture of your GPS tracker of that day.
That's right. That's right. I got to find that. Where I went, where I'm like left side of the fairway, then right side of the fairway, then left side of the fairway.
Circles and diagonals.
I will do that. If I can find that, that's going to be the image for this podcast. That's perfect. That's awesome. Okay, we should talk basketball because people, like, I mean, I'm that guy who like we'll do a basketball podcast and talk football for the first 20 minutes or whatever. So let's get straight to basketball. We have a schedule now. We have we have the polls. We're number 8 in the country. We know like what is ahead. So let's get the COVID fears out of the way first so that it doesn't hang over the rest of our conversation, and then we'll talk NCAA basketball. So I know you have some concerns there. Let's just talk about them, get them out of the way, and then we can talk basketball. So lay them out there, but don't go too long.
So my concern is just the randomness of it. I mean, and there's no better example of that than Wisconsin.
Yep.
in football. I mean, you can do everything right, which and you can have daily testing, and obviously the University of Illinois has one of the most robust testing operations in the country, and the coaching staff at Illinois has repeated the mantra of shrink your circle to, you know, keep everybody tight so you're not out in the public and you're not at risk of contracting the virus. But all it takes is one slip up. And you're down for 2 weeks, which if it came at the beginning of December, would wipe out those marquee games that we're also looking forward to against Baylor and against Duke.
Yep.
And it's just it could wreck everything. And it's not even, I mean, there's going to be college basketball this season. The NCAA is not going to miss another tournament. I don't think they can financially afford to do so. So there's going to be basketball. but it's going to be weird, like football. And there's, and whether it's a breakout in your own team or a breakout in the first opponent you have, it can, those kind of concerns are going to be out there for the entire duration of the season. I just don't know if it's possible to make it through without some sort of hiccup along the way or some sort of interruption. And that's what has me concerned.
Yeah, and every player of every team that makes the Final Four, you know, like that week, Monday through Friday, will be like, I don't want to check my phone. I just know our shooting guard is going to be out. You know, like, you know, it's this, you know, it's Minesweeper, right? It's like, you know, how do I just make sure we get all the way to the end without stepping on the wrong thing? So, yeah.
And I don't want to go too, oh, it's so Illinois.
Right.
But come on, it's so Illinois.
Yeah, yeah.
Our best two teams in 15 years. And we've been dealing with this for the last 8 months, and we're going to be dealing with another who knows how long.
Yep.
And as I whined to you via text recently, it's just so Illinois that we have this great team that we may not be able to see play because of the virus, and because of not being able to play, we don't build the recruiting momentum that we need, and we can't sustain this positivity because of the virus. It's just this circle of doom that I can't get out of my head. So I just need to get to Wednesday afternoon at 1 p.m. and I think I'll be just fine.
Exactly. Let's get the season started. And I agree with you. They're going to play basketball. Like, you know, I've had a couple people reach out to me with the, you know, with the restrictions that Illinois put in yesterday on, you know, basically canceled all high school sports and everything else. And you know, people are like, well, does that affect us? Can we practice? You know, like daily testing is the biggest thing here with the Big Ten having daily testing. And, you know, it's also why football came back, which is to say, look, if we can, and especially with a basketball team with only 13 players and maybe a couple walk-on and less staff and everything else, if we can test every single morning, if nobody walks into that facility or gets on the plane or does anything else, if they've tested positive, then you can probably contain this, and the fear of spreading it to family members and spreading it to, you know, what the reason we're so concerned about COVID is very, very much mitigated, is very much almost eliminated in that, you know, these players will get those tests. You know, you talk to some of the football players about like every morning getting this test, and they can't even, you know, they can't do anything until green light go. And so, you know, I think that daily testing is the reason why, even if states get crazy, even if it gets nuts, people are all worried about like, oh, well, would they cancel this like they did? I don't think they would, mostly because they have independent testing capacity that is not taking testing capacity away from any of these states that would need the testing and that type of thing. So that's why I'm, you know, not that I'm not concerned, and obviously there's way many different directions this could go in the next 4 months, but that's where I'm pretty assured that we're going to start playing basketball next Wednesday, and you know, Baylor and Duke is going to happen, and then we roll into the Big Ten season. So there's not too much. I think it's a totally different scenario than what we saw in March, which was it just started, we knew nothing, and you know, the projections of it blowing up and getting out of control like it did in New York City were just complete unknown. So with testing capacity, I think we will have a season, and you're right, the entire NCAA budget is dependent on having a season. So, you know, just like other sports, they're going to move forward with it. So that said, we can now put that to bed. We can not talk about it. We can now pretend this is a perfectly you know, it's a season that will happen, and we'll have no interruptions, and we'll have no players out. We can just pretend that the world is normal. And in that normal world, we have a number 8 team, which I feel like is maybe a little underrated. How do I say this? Like, I was thinking about this the other day. The Big Ten media poll, you go to, they did like 2 writers from every school, I think 28 total writers. The Cleveland paper does this every year. And they had, what was it, 16, 17, 18 of the 30. Illinois had the most first place votes and were easily the predicted winner of the Big Ten, which isn't reflected in the preseason AP poll, which had Iowa 5, Wisconsin 7, Illinois 8. But I think it says a lot that the media who cover the conference, you know, I think a lot of those Iowa votes were Luca Garza votes. And I think a lot of even the Wisconsin votes were like, oh, hey, Wisconsin won the title and they got five starters back. They must be pretty good. And so I'm almost thinking 8 is a little low. You know, maybe that's crazy. And maybe we, you know, obviously won a lot of close games last year. Maybe we lose some of those close games and it's more accurate. But I feel like with all the stuff that's coming out and the predictions of, you know, the top 20 players in college basketball, and we have two of them and all that stuff, I feel like it's leading to say, you know what? A lot of people are really, really behind this team. I mean, I'll let you talk in a second, but I gotta keep going. I saw the clip from Titus and Tate, the podcast, where they were talking about bandwagon teams. Like, this is the team that everybody's going to be like, you know what? They could win it all kind of thing. And they had this long clip on Illinois. And because of that stuff, you know, a couple freshman phenoms, and you got two of the top players in the ball game in college ball and everything else. So there's just so much surrounding Illinois and the buzz and the, wow, they've got kind of the perfect mix out there that I feel like 8 might be a little too low. Now I'll stop talking and let you talk.
Well, I think that you're seeing media that cover the teams, that know the teams, have a little more respect for Illinois versus the national writers. Like you said, I think there's a lot of because you can't escape it, a lot of looking back to last year and to assess your picks for the upcoming season. And but people who know the Big Ten and know Iowa, that they'll be a great offensive team like they always are, but they also know that Iowa doesn't play defense, and that's a problem in an NCAA tournament situation.
Yep.
They know the local media, Big Ten media, know that Wisconsin had a favorable schedule last year, and you pointed that out in one of your posts recently.
Yep.
But when they see Illinois, they have we have a little more well-rounded projection, where you have the two main guys, obviously Kofi and Io, and we did lose a lot, and that is one issue of yep. There's production in it that we have to replace.
Yep.
And that's an issue. Outside shooting is an issue, but I think that based on where this team is right now compared to the rest of the Big Ten, I think that it's a clear number one team in the conference. At least that's from my standpoint. And I we'll get into this, I'm sure, but I'm placing a lot of those, a lot of my optimism on our two freshmen. I'm really bullish on those two guys with respect to what they can bring and replace for what we missed last year. I think there's some nice symmetry in what we lost compared to what we're gaining. And I think that that's where Illinois is where we, I think, are the team to beat in the conference this year.
I would agree. And let's get into the, like, where the optimism comes from, and I'll let you take the freshman point. But for me, and I've said this so much in this preseason here, and it's going to be all over the preview, but like, for me, it's the mix. That, like, I'm that guy who has this formula of what makes a good team, and I laugh every time Kentucky goes out in the round of 32 with all these five stars, and it proves my, well, you have to have older guys. You just have to have experience. You know, and I ignore the freshman phenom teams that you know, that make deep tournament runs and everything else. But still, like, the mix is important to me with the way you assemble a team. You got to have some ready for the NBA guys, and you got to have those, got to have your Roger Powell, who's been there 4 years and knows everything. You got to have your glue guys. You got to have your shooter. You got to, you know, you have to mix everything together well, like, you know, some of these recent Villanova teams that won it all, or, you know, heck, you know, the majority of teams that are making a push for in a year like Illinois, where they have all the teams, all the roster together like this. I'm just bullish on the fact that there's the two came back from the NBA draft guys, which we all know. There's also two seniors, one has proven in the past to be this little instant offense thing. You know, it's been a struggle, and he's had to adapt to better, different roles. And maybe he was more defensive stopper than anything last year. But, you know, Trent is a senior. You've got to have those seniors. You've got to have the guys who have been through every corner of it. You know, you got to have a glue guy like DeMonte, who's going to get some big rebound somewhere, or he's going to get a block where it's like, how did he block that guy? He's, you know, 7 inches taller than him, and that type, you know, you got to have that guy who just does the little things. And you've got to have some freshmen, like superstars, some guys out of nowhere that are, you know, that add to more than what you thought the team would be, and give you something you weren't anticipating. And I'll let you take that. But that's my, like, that's the mix. You've got the senior, you got the experience here. You got the guys who are right on the cusp of leaving for the NBA. You've got the infusion of new talent. You know, you've got a guy like Georgie who's played a ton of basketball for 3 years. You know, there's just all these little pieces, and you mix it together, and I think it just makes for a really, really good team. So that's where the majority of my optimism comes from. And for you, it's the freshman, which I'll let you take.
Well, as you say, the mix is great. But as you also may know from our previous conversations, I'm a big continuity guy. It's not just about getting old and staying old. I think it's a lot about growing old together as a team. And I think that's why last year's team grew into the group that it was, even after a pretty slow start. But unlike last year, the continuity is not as robust as it was. Even though you think, oh, it was Andres Feliz, who was a starter, mm-hmm. Alan Griffin, Kipper Nichols. And you think, oh, that's just kind of fringe players on the outside looking in, but that's 30% of our production. And I don't want to get, you know, we'll talk about this, like you mentioned in the preview, I'll go into that, but that's a pretty big chunk to try and regain. But I think the symmetry of what we're bringing in is almost too perfect.
Yeah.
And when you had Feliz, you had this tough as nails, do everything point guard. If you needed a bucket, you get a bucket. You need a defensive play, he made the play. If you need to get the ball in the position for someone else to score, he would do that. He was just kind of your Swiss Army knife that did so many things for this team, and that's how I view Andre Curbelo. He's not going to be as physically strong as Feliz was, obviously, coming in as a freshman. He has put on some weight as all freshmen do under the eyes of Fletch, but I just feel that your perfect replacement for Andres Feliz is sitting there in Andre Curbelo. He's a do everything guy. He has a feel for the game that is beyond his age. He's a good finisher, a good rebounder for his size. He's got a little flash to him. He's really fun to watch. He's a winner. And that's just, to me, is a perfect parallel to Feliz. And I think that's where he kind of fits in. From on the other side, the other big freshman impact player, of course, is Adam Miller from Chicago, and he's a scorer. And to me, there's your Alan Griffin replacement. Miller is a big body. He came with a Big Ten body ready, and he's put even more weight on himself. So he's going to be ready to play from day one. I think if you put odds on for your Big Ten freshman of the year, I would put my money on Adam Miller. I think he's going to have a huge contribution. One of the biggest deficits or flaws of last year's team was the outside shooting. Miller comes in with that really sweet left-handed shooting stroke. I think he's going to be an inviting target on the wing off of dribble penetration and in that ball screen weave. He's going to be a plus finisher at this level because of his frame. And I think he is like a perfect Alan Griffin replacement. And then even if I want to go a little deeper, not to a freshman, but if you look at Kipper Nichols, I think your perfect Kipper Nichols replacement is Jacob Grandison, the transfer from Holy Cross, who I think is a perfect, he's more of a traditional forward. And even though we're going to see primarily, I think, four guards and one big this year, we're going to see a lot of those sets. But on nights where size is more at a premium, I think you'll see Grandison come in and play the four in a more traditional sense. He's a good rebounder. He's got a good shooting stroke. I think he's a you know, 18 to 20 minute a guy, kind of like last year, kind of like Kipper was, and will replace the production that Kipper Nichols gave us, as inconsistent as it was. And so I've kind of in my head had this, okay, we lost Andres Feliz, you lost Alan Griffin, you lose Kiper Nichols, but you got a perfect replacement at each of those positions, which is really why I'm bullish on us being better than just top eight. And what that kind of invites us into final four type conversations.
And then you can look to, okay, well, if those are replaced, you know, then anything you get from anybody else is a bonus. Like if Hutchison, like if his back's okay and he can be a off the bench shooter, or if Coleman Hawkins is a point forward kind of like guy, or, you know, whatever. If, you know, like the only spot I'm thinking that I'm not sure where the minutes are coming from is the third, like that, you know, they had to turn, I guess it would be Hamlin. Like they had to turn to Hamlin a fair bit last year, more than maybe we remember, because, you know, maybe just Kipper couldn't be there as guarding the five or whatever, and Georgie's in foul trouble and it's just Kofi and he needs a break. And what are you going to do? You got to go to Hamlin, you know, that fourth big is maybe the only thing in my head of like, okay, well, what happens there? What happens with Georgie and Kofi foul trouble? Is it Grandison and then Hawkins? Like, who's the, you know, is it Hamlin? Like, that's really the only question I have of like what happens in that scenario. So I'll pose it to you. Like, what would you see in that scenario?
Well, and if we're debating with the ninth guy on the rotation,
exactly.
What then we're in guy, pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to see Jermaine Hamlin in situations like you described, where Georgie and Kofi both get into weird foul trouble, and you see Jermaine come in for 5 minutes in the first half to kind of fill the gap to get to the second half.
Yep.
I don't think he's going to be a major contributor this year, so that doesn't concern me as much as you. I mean, there's a five guard rotation. You have Io, you've got Trent, you've got DMW, you've got Curbelo, and you've got Miller, and that rotation is going to get the bulk of.
Yep.
Of the minutes to go along with Kofi down low. Grandison's going to play. Hutcherson obviously has got that back injury. Not sure about his status. And I think that is a blow. I think the coaching staff was going into the summer was thinking that his outside shooting stroke and his athleticism was going to be a big part. But knowing what I know about back injuries from my real life job, I just can't count on him until I see him in action. I don't want to make any speculation. Same thing with BBV, with Bosman's Verdonk. He's on the shelf again with a foot injury, and that's just, you know, you've seen in the football field with Mike Epstein. It's just something that until you see them be able to string minutes together and not get hurt, it's just tough to rely on or expect anything. I think your mystery guy inheriting the title from BBV this year is the guy you mentioned, Coleman Hawkins. The interesting thing to me about him is that his skill set equates to the quintessential four in the spread offense, which Underwood has gone away from this year.
Right.
If we were running the spread, I think Coleman Hawkins would have a huge role, a much bigger role.
Yeah.
Because he is the perfect guy for the spread. He's 6'10", got a good handle, good shooting stroke. He's a good passer. He was tailor-made for the pinch post, but this year we're not going to see that. I would be surprised if we went back to spread at all. Mm-hmm. I think we're kind of married to this now ball screen continuity look that we really grew into last year, and the transformation of which is just still stunning to me. And again, we'll cover that in the preview, but the fact that you went into the summer with two distinct schemes on defense and offense, and by January of the season, you had completely overhauled both sides of the floor. It's just stunning and the remarkable transformation. So, but is there a spot for getting back to Coleman Hawkins? Is there a spot for a guy who is that skilled? Sure. But again, the minutes are going to be at a premium. These guys are going to play, you know, in blowouts, but when we get in the Big Ten conference and the rotations shrink and you're going to see eight, nine guys at max, it's just a numbers game, and you're probably not going to see those guys, you know, barring some sort of injury or something else unusual that you wouldn't otherwise expect.
You know, you mentioned the preview, so we should probably tease it here. The preview comes out Monday. It is
I better get to writing.
Were you aware of that, Tyler? The preview comes out Monday. I'll just say it. It'll be the biggest. Here's the tease. It's going to be longer than the football preview was this year. Like last year, the football preview, like in 2019, the football preview was 27,000 words, and I think our basketball preview was like 11,000 words. Just because of the time I have available to dedicate, and with football you're breaking down 85 players, and basketball you're breaking down 13. But yeah, it's just rest assured, it's going to be the football preview this year was like 19,000 words, and basketball is going to be over 20. So there's your tease. Check back on Monday. It's going to be a lot of basketball words, a whole lot. It might be 25, and so that's like 2.5 hours of reading or whatever. Anyway, so that said, let's get back to this preview of the team. Let's cover like biggest concern, and I'll go first so I can claim it so you can't take it and you can think about your answer. My biggest concern, obviously, is, you know, you brought it up, is how big were Feliz and Griffin? You know, how many times did we hear or did we watch Feliz pull us out of a funk, you know, in maybe a non-conference game against a nobody, but suddenly it's a 6-point game and Feliz just took over. He did that so many times. He did in the Big Ten play, everything else. You know, can we count on a freshman to do that? I hope so. And I think Curbelo will live up to his billing, but there's still this like, well, he's got to do it first. And if he can't do it, then we think, oh man, we really miss Feliz in these moments. It's either Io or what? And then, the you know, on the flip side, Griffin, you know, we probably don't win at Northwestern without Alan Griffin going off. Will Adam Miller be able to do that? Or, you know, I feel like Griffin was primed for like a breakout year. Like if he was on this team, good Lord, I'd be even more crazy excited. And so,
and the computers loved Alan Griffin. Yes. Even with Io expected out, when some of the early Ken Pom and T rankings came out, when Illinois was still in the 18, 19, 20 range, even without Io, with yep. counting Kofi, mm-hmm. but when, because the computers really love what Alan Griffin brings them, when he transferred to Syracuse and you did a little T rank yep. site trick where you can remove guys from the roster, we went from like 18th to somewhere in the 40s just because of Alan Griffin. So yep. yes, he's a big loss, and I don't want to sugarcoat that. Yep. But.
And that's my fear. I mean, obviously, you know, how many times have we all said Miller Curbelo, Miller Curbelo, Miller Curbelo, and you know, but still freshman, you still got to see it. It still has to be a thing on the court. So you know, that's my concern is, you know, those are two losses. I'm not saying, oh no, we're going to be a bad team, but it's more like, man, how much will we miss those guys, and how much were they part of you know, 13-7 in the Big Ten? So that's my concern going into the season. Where would you put yours?
Well, I'll give you a big picture concern that narrows into a very specific concern. My big picture concern is, can you really expect guys like Io and Kofi, who had such great seasons last year, to produce more this year? I kind of feel like that, especially with Io, he was so good. I mean, and he was obviously so clutch in so many instances, but where can he improve? And because even at that high level, you just don't typically see a huge improvement in guys from their junior year. I mean, from their sophomore year to their junior years, it's just not something you see as dramatically as you see it from freshman to sophomore, for example. And so, and even though Kofi is going from freshman to sophomore, because he was so good as a freshman, how much can you really expect him to leap from his last year's numbers? So that's why I've kind of worried about the ceiling, because of the concern that we're really the same team as we were last year, minus those three guys that we talked about earlier. And then specifically, as I narrow it down further, if there is a way that you can get some improvement from that group, it's in the area of outside shooting. And that's my biggest, most specific concern is this team did not shoot well from the 3-point line last year. I think what was like 310th in the country, 30% or something like that for the year. And that is a potential killer if you're in a tournament situation. If you go 0 of 17 for three or 1 of 17 from 3 one night, you go home. And so that's where I have my biggest concern is, and I'm hoping for a bounce back year from Io, from Trent, guys who shot the ball well as the previous years. Now, obviously, the 3-point line was extended, and I think they struggled a little bit with that adjustment. But now a year under their belt, I'm not going to say I expect it, but I'm hoping that we see a little bit of reversion back to their previous shooting percentages, because they did show that they were able to shoot from distance. There's a website that I was referring to in last year's preview where that they were able to take the percentages of jump shots from the NBA distance, and both Io and Trent were in the upper 30s. But then obviously last year they were both in the I think the 20s for Io and the lower 30s for Trent. But again, if this team doesn't shoot well or shoot better from the outside, there's going to be games where that costs them. And you're going to lose some games because of that. So again, looking for some bounce back from Io, from Trent, and Adam Miller. I think he's going to be a great shooter. Maybe Grandison. And I'll hang my a little bit on this tiniest of sample sizes. In the last six games of last year, DMW Damonte Williams shot 8 of 17 from the three, and his stroke has always looked good to me. So I'm hoping that carries over a little bit into this year as well to add another threat from the outside.
I'm gonna give you a blazing, scalding hot take. You ready?
Okay.
This is such a football guy thing to say. Like I sometimes look at 3-point shooting like I look at turnovers in football, to where we talked about it coming into this season. Illinois had a big turnover year last year. And so this year, that's the concern. It's like, gosh, can they keep that up? And are the takeaways really going to happen? And are the tip balls going to fall into our hands? And like, you know, they just seem to come and go, right? So are they still going to be arriving? I sometimes look at 3-point shooting like that. Like we'll have a year where we shoot really well from three and, you know, bring a lot of those guys back. And it just doesn't happen the next year. And it's like, you know, this doesn't fit my, you know, my normal progression of like, you're bad as a freshman and then you get better as a sophomore and better, you know. So when you see shooting numbers go from, you know, 38% to 32% to 41%, you know, it's like, well, what, like, why aren't these consistent and that? So I have this feeling like, because we had a bad shooting year last year, I feel like you will see bounce backs because of what we've seen in the past and everything else. I have no data to back that up. I have no anything to back that up other than when it comes to specifically 3-point shooting, I have this like, if you had a bad year last year, you're going to be better. If you had a good year this year, you're going to be worse. I have nothing to back that up. Scalding hot take.
I'm with you, but my one hesitation is the change in distance. If there wasn't, I mean, there was a distance of 19.9 or whatever from 2018, 2019, went to 29, I think 20'9", I think in last year. And to me that's cause and effect, at least potentially.
Yeah.
And if it's just a situation where Trent and Io were good shooters and functional shooters at the previous distance, and they're not at this new distance, then maybe we don't see that improvement. But as I said, if you look at the deep dive stats, for the shots they took that were at the deeper distance, they shot the ball well. And so maybe that gives me hope that there will be a bounce back. You know, I think there will. I do. I just don't know if you can count it from both of them. I think really the more likely situation is where you see maybe one of them just kind of has a similar flat line on their shooting percentages from last year, while one has a nice little bounce back performance, and maybe you make up the slack with one of the other guys, whether it's Grandison, whether it's Miller, whoever. That's what I would guess would happen.
Yeah, and I know
it's just so important because it affects the scheme. If you don't have threats from the outside, defenses don't have to guard in the same way. They can collapse, and it just mucks up everything. So it's just so important to have guys to keep defenses honest on the wings, to make the offense run smoother.
Yeah. And this is total August syndrome for me, where, you know, you go to football camp and you watch a quarterback in 7-on-7 drills complete 11 consecutive passes, and you think he's going to be awesome. But, like, in my mind, I can't see Trent not having a bounce back. Like, senior year Trent Frazier, after what we saw as a freshman and after what we've seen in the past and his moments and how he's taken different, like, there's no way senior year Trent Frazier doesn't have, like, a bounce back shooting from three, you know, like the Missouri game 3 years ago or whatever. And, you know, there's just, like, it just has to happen, right? Like, I can't, maybe we'll get to the season, he's not shooting well, and I'll accept it, but it's preseason, and I am totally locked in on senior year Trent will be something we'll remember for a long time.
I'm with you.
Perfect. I love it. It's going to happen. There. Because we agree, it's going to happen.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about the other end of the floor. Let's talk about defense. This is the part where I always rely on you. I write about that. I will text you. You know, I'll even text you things during a game like, how do we look? Are we playing good defense? Because I think we're playing good defense, but I don't have an eye for defense. So what do you think of this team defensively?
Well, it's so different from from the previous. It's just fascinating. Like I said,
yep,
that you had this
morph
system, this system that that basically Underwood built his entire resume on. He brought it. He ran it. It was his coaching tree that he followed, and he used it at SFA, and he used it at Oklahoma State to a point. He brought it here, and he used it for his first two seasons here. And coaches, especially college basketball, they're system guys. You know, they don't. They're products of their environment to an extreme. They establish a system, they recruit to that system, and they live and die with that system. And even last summer, this team went to Italy to play in that overseas trip that they did.
Yep.
And the videos that you watched from those games, they were still playing pressure defense. And that's August. And all of a sudden, by the second game of the year, you're like, wait a minute, something's different here. What's going on? They're not on the line, up the line anymore. They're anything but. And a lot of it had to do with Stephen Gentry coming in. I think he got into Underwood's ear and pointed a few things out. There was a really insightful podcast that I don't know if you listened to or not over the summer, where Gentry kind of outlined some of the rationale and his persuasion tactics he used to talk Underwood into a defensive switch. But I mean, you and I and have had this discussion, and I've written many times on the site about my concerns about the defense, about how it does exactly what it's designed to do, which is force turnovers, but that's not what the goal of a defense is. The goal of a defense is to prevent the other team from scoring points. And it really wasn't good at doing that. Whereas last season, after the overhaul, and once the system kind of, as they, you know, they went through some growing pains in installing the system in November, December, but once the Big Ten season got rolling and kind of that, there was that night at home against Purdue where we held the 37 points, like, the worst offensive performance in Purdue school history. And that really just, it took off from there. And it was just, it was an impressive defense. It was, I think, fourth in the conference in defensive efficiency. Whereas in the previous 2 years, it was, I think, 11th and 11th in back-to-back seasons. It's going to be the same this year. I don't see any reason where it's going to change back. I mean, you might see press it's here and there, some zone here and there kind of thing, but they're going to rely on that. They're going to fall back in the pack line like they did last year. They're going to try to keep the ball out of the middle, and anything else that does get through, Kofi's waiting for the block shot. So that's kind of what the philosophy is. It's more of a traditional defense, but I think that's a change for the better.
Should we expect improvement given that now, you know, all off season this is what they've been running, and this is the second year going with the same basic players. I mean, I don't think Alan Griffin was a big part of the defensive surge last year. So, you know, should we expect it to be better than fourth in the Big Ten this year?
I think it's I don't know if it's better than fourth. I think it's a reasonable expectation that you have players who've been working on the system and now are familiar with it for a whole year and have been able to hone those concepts a lot better. So I think that you could that component will be better. Now, are you going to be fourth or third or fifth? And I don't want to go that far, but as long as you're in the top half, top six, we'll say, of the conference defensive efficiency, I'm going to be happy because that's pretty much where you need to be historically to be, consider yourself an upper tier Big Ten championship kind of caliber team.
I mean, I'm good with that. I'm okay with that. Like, give me the sixth defense and the third offense and you know, I who was it? I read somebody. You'll probably know. The point was that when KenPom's stuff came out that I forget who runs with this theory, but because the Illinois numbers were so close, something like, you know, 21 defense, 20 offense or something, or however that was, that those are the teams to watch out for. It's not the Iowas that expect the number 2 offense and the number 79 defense or whatever. It's look for the balanced teams and look over the years of KenPom that the balanced teams in the preseason are the ones who went really far. Who do you know whose point that is?
No, I remember reading that.
Yeah.
That exact tweet. And yep. I immediately said, you know, that's a good way to look at it. Because I know that, you know, you see the national writers polls and, you know, all, you know, top Andy Katz, top 4. And then the AP poll comes out and we're top 8. And then you see KenPom and T-Rank. We're like, 18? We were 18 last year. Mm-hmm. What's up with that? And Illini fans are freaking out. And it's like, it's not, it's just a computer model based on efficiencies. And yeah, if you skew and you're the number 1 defense and the number 30 offense, you're going to be up there pretty high. But if you're like you pointed out, if we're more middle of the road, then you're not going to have that high of rating. And as I say, I don't say ranking because he's not ranking teams. He's just listing what the computer spits out.
Yep.
Based on these efficiency numbers. But I think there's something to be said for having consistency, so you're not overly reliant on one side of the ball versus the other. And one other thing that it should also be pointed out, and this is something I mentioned in the preview too, with respect to KenPom, is my understanding is that his model does not really take into account freshmen unless they're 5 stars. Because to be fair, the computer can't necessarily project whether or not a guy is going to play or not. You know, if it's a 5-star recruit,
yep,
that person's going to play. If it's a 4-star recruit, they might, they probably will, but you know, you can't rely on those numbers. So I think another factor of why Illinois was a little bit lower in the computer models is that they're not factoring in the potential production of the freshmen.
Okay, now I want to switch to the thing I'm probably most excited about. Okay, I want to hang a banner in the State Farm Center. Mm-hmm. I want a Big Ten title. I drove to Columbus to sit in the crowd last year when we controlled our destiny with 2 games left, win them both, and we'd get at least a share. I just, that banner is important to me, and I would love to see another one hanging in the State Farm Center. So I was, when the schedule came out today, like, for me, who's been waiting for the schedule and like, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, this was a 9.9 out of 10 schedule to me.
Yep.
Because it's, you know, I ran through all the numbers on Twitter and I pulled it up here. So, you know, I'm going to read some of it. The biggest, like I boiled it down to this, like this is where it comes to. So, yeah, you're going to play 7 home and home. So it's 14 games. You play 3 teams only on the road. You play 3 teams only at home. That's how the Big Ten works now. And so those 7 home and homes, 2 are really tough or decently tough home and homes. One's Wisconsin, one's Ohio State. So let's just set those aside. Everybody's going to have tough home and homes. Here's the rest of the schedule. You play these teams twice: Minnesota, Indiana, Penn State, who is going to fall apart, Northwestern and Nebraska. You get two games against all those. And then these are the teams you only play once. Michigan State, Iowa, Michigan, Rutgers, Maryland, Purdue. You could not design a schedule. I mean, maybe you'd want Michigan State at home instead of the only game being at Breslin. Like, maybe, you know, obviously there's a little quibble here and there, but like, you know, to basically to have eight games, you know, I think Minnesota, Penn State, Northwestern, Nebraska are all going to struggle this year. That feels like 11, 12, 13. That feels like the first game of the Big Ten tournament, like the first night with the four teams. It feels like it's going to be Penn State, Northwestern, Nebraska, and probably Minnesota. So to have eight games against those four teams, and then your only other home and homes are Indiana, Ohio State, and Wisconsin, and then you only get one with teams like Iowa, Michigan State, Michigan, like Rutgers even. You know, they could be a top five team. I don't think if you're wanting to win a Big Ten title, I can't design a schedule any better in my mind. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, you've put the work in on the schedule historically, and I'm always in awe of your numbers. And I've been more of a, you know, what's on the schedule, play what's in front of me. I guess my only caveat is that unfortunately the year that you had, like you, as you mentioned, we had such a favorable schedule that you wonder if the home road issue is going to be as much of a big deal as it is because of the no crowd thing.
Right. I mean,
you were at a football game without crowds. I don't know if you've got a sense of if it makes a difference. I know that, you know, there's comfort zone with shooting environments and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know what to make of what road and home is going to mean without fans in the stands.
Yeah.
So, but just from a pure difficulty level, yeah, it's as each mentioned, you couldn't match up a better schedule with a team that has Big Ten championship aspirations.
And that's why I wrote that last tweet the way that I did, is just instead of, you know, I at first started looking at, okay, here's the teams you play at home. These are only once, these guys are your home and away and all that. But then I'm like, you know what? The best way to look at this is single plays, because kind of doesn't matter just as much if Michigan State's a single play on the road or at home, given the lack of fan environment. So what really matters here is not so much like, oh gosh, we got to go to this school and to that school. What really is going to matter in that scenario is who are the teams you only play once. And to have it be, you know, you could see a scenario where the top five teams in the conference are Illinois, Michigan State, Iowa, Michigan, and Rutgers. Like you could see that if Wisconsin falls apart or just doesn't put it together and doesn't have the same schedule they did last year. And, you know,
we always say that.
Right.
Then Wisconsin's always right there.
You're right. So right. But I'm just saying, like, that you could see a scenario where we're in the top five and we only play one game against the other four teams in the top five. Like, you can't design. So there's some poor school out there that will be playing all the top five. I meant to do that tonight, to like go through the other schedules to find out who got just murdered. Because if we had it this season, somebody got murdered.
You know who I apologize to? Nobody.
That's right. That's right. After years of, Illinois has seven of the first eight on the road in the Big Ten.
My flyby of the Twitter world after the schedule came out, it seems to be the consensus is that Wisconsin actually got a little bit of the schedule beat down this year compared to previous years.
Oh no,
so that's almost poetic.
Yeah. I'm so sad. I hope they make it through. I'm giddy at the schedule because, you know, and. You know, I'm tweeting about it, and obviously people are responding like, man, I'd rather play Iowa twice, and like, I love the matchups, and I get that. I understand that. I'm selfish. I want a banner. I want to stare at that banner in 20 years and be like, yeah, I was there for that. And this couldn't be any better. In my mind, I just can't design a better schedule. I just can't do it. Okay, so I think we've covered most anything else. So we're almost to an hour here. So let's just get to some closing thoughts. So I'll let you go first. Just generally, we're a week away. your excitement level, like just what you're thinking as you approach this season?
Well, I can't deny that, the COVID specter lessens. Lessens probably the wrong word. It mutes my excitement level a little bit. I'm sure the first time that I see these games and the tip off starts, and hopefully you and I have the opportunity to be present as media, I'm sure that'll change. But I was so impressed with the turnaround from last year and watching this team grow and as they transform their offense and their defense, and you saw the things start to click as the season went along, and then it was taken away, obviously, so suddenly. I just want to see it continue to evolve, and that makes me so excited to get this season started. I just feel like, because it was such an abrupt ending last year, that I feel like we're finally just ready to hit the ground running again, and it feels like that it's just going to be this big release of, oh my God, I'm so glad to see basketball again and see these guys give one more shot at it, and obviously the hype and surrounding this team is off the charts, and I think they'll live up to it, and I just can't wait to get things started. I really can't wait to get through the, you know, Illini Classic type,
yep,
and games notwithstanding. I'm really got the next Wednesday and next Tuesday circle to see, you know, every year in the preview, and it's going to be a little bit difficult this year because of to write the schedule piece because of the way things are shaping up. But I always kind of have the game where you know everything you need to know about this team. We're going to get that in week two and week three.
2 weeks from tonight.
And Baylor, right.
I mean, that's crazy, right? 2 weeks from tonight.
Yep.
Yep. I think my focus this year, I'm just thrilled to see a preseason first team All-American. You know, how many times when writing about basketball the last 10 years have I talked about, like, you know, we just haven't had a name guy. We just haven't had that guy. You know, I love Malcolm Hill. I love Brandon Paul. I love what they brought and the fire. And, you know, I like this, but we just haven't had the Ken Norman team. We haven't had the, oh God, how great were Nick and Kenny and Kendall together. And we, you know, we just haven't had the name,
the cover guy,
the guy
who was on the front, on the front page of the magazine.
Exactly. And to have that guy, I'm just so excited going into the season with a preseason All-American, because, you know, it's just, you know, and there's this tiny part of my brain after dealing with the Miller won't come here if Io is here. You know, I've always explained to people, like, nobody understands what it's like if you have 10,000 followers and you read your mentions. Like, things get drilled into me. Like, you know, I heard from 600 people at different times about the same, like, why are we chasing Miller? You know, like you just have to understand my unique, specific experience in this, that maybe you're reading it here on a message board, or maybe but people are sending it to me constantly, hourly, all the time. And when I choose to read those, which some people don't, but when I choose to read those, the volume of certain statements grow so loud in my ears, and maybe nobody else's ears, that I dealt so much with this notion, this concept that Miller and I would never be playing basketball together. I don't know where it came from. I don't know what it was. It was everybody's favorite take. And so, you know, I have this, like, real joy that Io is still here. And maybe we have COVID to thank, and maybe the fact that the NBA draft wasn't until tonight. And I don't know what, you know, led that train to end up in this station. But, like, the fact that Io, we have a preseason All-American here, and he's going to be playing with Adam Miller, is beyond exciting to me. Like, that's like chef's kiss. And so I'm so ready for this to happen.
I just want to look back. I say this, you know, I don't want to put myself in anyone else's shoes, but I just want Io, and to some degree Kofi, to be able to look back after this year and say, you know what, it was worth it. That weekend in August or early in July, whenever it was this summer, when on back-to-back nights,
yep,
we found out that they were both coming back. And I just want them to be able to look back and say, we made the right call, and it was worth it because we did something special at this university. And again, I can't wait to get it started.
I am so ready. Okay, man, we've gone an hour now, so I will let you get to sleep and I'll go do the same. And I hope you have nice dreams of banners hanging in the State Farm Center.
I'm with you.
All right. That's all we got. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Go Illini.
Go Illini.